Your dog's ready for one more block. Your knees, not so much. Time to call Joint Relief Institute. Fast, non-surgical knee pain relief. 708-888-0000.
720 WGN. Yes, everybody knows what that song is, Over the Rainbow. Today's the anniversary of the release of The Wizard of Oz. First time it was shown in a movie theater. John Fricke, do I got your name right? Is that correct? If not, correct it.
Yes, it is. Thank you, John.
Oh, no, you are totally welcome. You are a Wizard of Oz expert, and you got some great, great stuff here. I've been teasing the location of the premiere of The Wizard of Oz for the first...
Well, it's kind of crazy because MGM wanted to test the movie in resort areas where there'd be a lot of families in the week preceding the official premiere in Hollywood and in New York. So it first went up in Massachusetts on August 9th, but August 10th is when it opened in the Midwest up in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And that's kind of nice for me because I grew up in Milwaukee, and then it played half a dozen other towns. That had lakes, that had resort communities where there were a lot of families on vacation that week of August 9th or so. Sheboygan, Oconomowoc, Appleton, Nina. So it was being tested to make sure that the ad campaign was pulling in the family audience, which it was. There were no further changes in Oz from then on. And it opened in Los Angeles August 15th, on Broadway August 17th. And from the beginning, it was... there are a lot of myths about The Wizard of Oz, and one of them is that people didn't like it, reviewers didn't like it. And that's just not honest. It's just not true. And I would say it if it were. I want to be... If I'm going to be a historian, I'd like to be an accurate one.
Right. Are you a Packers fan? Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm having trouble hearing you, John. As I told Jack a minute ago, I've got very old ears.
Yeah. You went to Northwestern, right?
Yep. Class of 74. Fantastic. And that's how I got my first connection to WGN, which was one reason I was so happy when Ashley reached out to me about this last week. I did a number of shows about Judy Garland with Roy Leonard while I was in college. And then when I started writing books about Oz and Judy and doing CD sets, he would have me on as a guest. It was a joy.
Yeah, Roy was absolutely fantastic. So what was it that attracted you to The Wizard of Oz? Because it almost sounds like that's your, correct me if I'm wrong, exclusive area of expertise and publications, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, as you know, and as everybody listening to this knows, we don't choose these things that fascinate us. They choose us.
Uh-huh.
And this November 3rd, it'll be 70 years since The Wizard of Oz was first shown on network television in the United States. And anybody who grew up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, when you could only see it once a year on TV before home video, that was a very sacred night for kids and for families. And I saw it that very first night in 1956. I was five. And I loved music. I had parents who loved music. I had a little phonograph record. But Oz really knocked me sideways. And I got a Judy Garland album, a Wizard of Oz album, and a Wizard of Oz storybook for my sixth birthday. Then I found out that there were 40 Oz books and that Judy had made other movies. And I was kind of set for life. And I didn't ask for it. But once I had that, it held me on. And I never expected it to become a career either, but I'm very grateful that it did.
So what was it? Did they do audience research back then and pick Green Bay based on some sort of profile that they found? Because it seems to me such a random town to, and I'm not trying to do a Packer thing or anything. It just seems like a random town to pick.
John, I'm so sorry, but I'm not getting any of that. I know you're talking, but it's just not loud enough.
Are you serious or no?
No, I'm really serious. Honest to God, I am. I don't usually have that trouble with my laptop. It's up all the way.
Huh. Well, I don't know what to say about that because I'm not technical. Are we?
Well, do your best, Ethel Merman, and we'll keep going.
Wow. Maybe we should.
That I heard.
Maybe we should jack it up on this end. Well, I apologize. Well, if it's our fault, I apologize that we're not coming through. I have no idea why. We've been talking to people all night, and you're the first to give us this information. And
apologize. As I say, I have old ears, but I don't. I do a lot of Zoom and a lot of interviews on this laptop, and this is kind of a challenge. But if you speak slowly and, like I said, belt it out, ask whatever you want, and it won't be painful at all.
Okay. What?
That was good.
He's playing me. Is it true that over the rainbow came extremely close to being left on the cutting room floor?
Yes, it was. And I'll pick up the tempo now because I appreciate that question. Oz, as I said, did these previews in resort towns that week in August. But MGM had taken the movie out in June around the Los Angeles area to do what they called sneak previews in those days, where new films would be sneaked into a theater bill that had a good crowd, and then the audience would be asked to fill out review cards and tell about their reactions. Well, none of the reactions disliked Over the Rainbow, but the studio had to cut 20 minutes from The Wizard of Oz. It was over 2 hours long when they first assembled it, and that was too long for a movie of that time. So they cut Judy's big number in the Haunted Forest, the Jitterbug with the Scarecrow, Tin Man, and Lion, and the Fighting Trees. They cut Ray Bolger's specialty dance to If I Only Had a Brain. They trimmed down a lot of Margaret Hamilton's part as the witch as much as they possibly could, because children were being carried out of the previews in hysterics at the Wicked Witch.
Right.
And one of the first things the studio executive said can go is Over the Rainbow. It comes early in the film. It slows down the story. We shouldn't have an MGM star singing in a barnyard. They had every possible argument against it. And this was after the first preview. And when the film went to Pomona, California for the second preview, Judy was there. Harold Arlen and Yip Harburg, who wrote the songs, were there. Arthur Freed, who was the associate producer, oversaw so much of Oz. They were all there, and none of them could believe what happened, because after Aunt Em says to Dorothy, find yourself a place where you won't get into any trouble, instead of Judy going into the song, it cut right to da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da and Miss Gulch coming to take away the dog. Over the Rainbow was nowhere to be seen. And Mervyn LeRoy, Arthur Freed, they all went into the office of Louis B. Mayer, the head of MGM, and said, you've got to put it back in. And finally, Arthur Freed, who is in the process of becoming a film producer, said to Louis B. Mayer, look, Louis, the song stays or I go. And Louis B. Mayer knew he couldn't relinquish somebody as gifted as Arthur Freed. And so they left the song in on the chance. This is the quote in the paperwork. On the chance it might go. And of course, it won the Academy Award as best song that year. In 2000, I think it was voted the number one song of the 20th century by a poll of arts people and entertainment people. When the AFI did its special on the greatest songs of the movies, White Christmas was number two, but Over the Rainbow was number one. And it just keeps renewing itself. It's a wonderful thing.
I keep hearing stories very similar to yours, obviously not exactly the same, of movie executives attempting to step in and take iconic, what have become iconic portions of movies out. They didn't want them. For instance, I'm not comparing the movies, but Blazing Saddles was, I've heard from Mel Brooks, he got a whole list of things that had to go. Go, go, this has to go, go, go. And he didn't take any of them out. he just left them in. And
now, if
became
you had
like,
the power, yes. You could insist on that. Yes, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's all right. Well,
this happened very often, especially with musicals, because it was, if you wanted to cut 15 minutes out of a musical, you just cut out four songs,
right,
and
exactly.
You had your 15 minutes. And unfortunately, a lot of those songs, Judy's, Gene Kelly's, Fred Astaire's, all so many great performers doing great songs that were taken out of films were all either lost in a vault fire at MGM or when in 1970, everything old was trashable. Yeah. And they threw out all the orchestrations, all the scripts, all the they sold off all the costumes and props. The surviving nitrate film, because nitrate back in the 30s and 40s was the flammable substance of celluloid, all of that material that was left was put on on trucks and put on a barge and dumped in the Pacific Ocean. So who knows what we lost along the way, but thank goodness Over the Rainbow was not one of them. There was a 1 minute sequence that was cut of The Wizard of Oz that is the one thing I would like to see. After Dorothy melts the Wicked Witch, you can see the guard saying, "The Wicked Witch is dead." And it dissolves, the film dissolves to the head of the Great Oz on the throne saying, "Why have you come back?" Well, if you watch the dissolve very closely, after the guards say, "The Wicked Witch is dead," you can see as the dissolve is going that their mouths continue to move, although there isn't any song. And what that they were doing was lip syncing to a reprise of Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead that started in the Witch's Tower, but after a few bars went to this huge 350-person procession through the streets of the Emerald City, singing Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, escorting Dorothy and the Scarecrow and the Tin Man, the Scarecrow carrying the Witch's Broom and the Lion back to the Wizard's Palace. And it's a great vocal arrangement. It includes little bits of Off to See the Wizard and Merry Old Land of Oz. And it was only a minute long. And that's the minute I wish they still had and could put back. Not that you asked.
It was my next question. We'll be back.
I hope I get to work with you again. Thank you. This is fun.
You know what? It also strikes me that it would be awesome to watch the Wizard of Oz with you in a theater, because you could do a running commentary that would be unbelievable. Anyway,
I've had friends who throw parties. Who have thrown parties for me to do that, not in recent years, because anytime you buy the DVD of The Wizard of Oz since 2005, I do the commentary track on the DVD, the alternate audio track. Plus, it includes interview clips with the Wicked Witch and the Scarecrow and the vocal arranger and the producer. It's a real wonderful way to get the backstory of The Wizard of Oz is on that DVD. I don't get a cent, so don't think I'm promoting.
Okay. We're going to do more when we come back here at 720 WGN. Yes, they do. That's who they represent, but we don't know how they're voting. 720 WGN with John Landecker at 851. And we're talking The Wizard of Oz, on its release anniversary with John Fricke, who is, to say he's an expert is an understatement. So what am I going to ask you? So you have spent decades, you've devoted your life to this, basically, in all sorts of different media, books, films, TV. What do you think?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. I'm not going to deny it.
No, I'm getting to this question, like, of all the, what is the biggest legend that people have confronted you with about this movie that you've had to debunk? Is there one particular thing that people keep throwing at you and you're going, "No, that's not what happened"?
Well, there was only one up until about 15 years ago when social media and the internet came along, and now there are several dozen. But I'll go back to the one that was perpetrated by the first author who wrote about the Wizard of Oz movie back in the 1970s, a respected journalist, and she had the advantage of interviewing many of the people who worked on the film because they were still alive then. And I didn't plan on writing a book about Oz until the 50th anniversary came up 15 years later. Her book took great delight in saying that critics didn't like the film. She quotes from three very negative reviews that Oz got in 1939 and a couple quotes from others that were mixed. And she does a great song and dance about how it lost money. That part is true. But when it came time to write the 50th anniversary book, the research I did, the only three bad reviews it got were those she printed. And when we did the 50th anniversary book in 1989, we published excerpts from 70 original Wizard of Oz reviews that were absolutely jubilant. Things like Oz should be shown every year. There's an audience for Oz wherever there's a projector and a screen. This is... The critics were very enthusiastic. The audiences turned out like crazy. The implication in this woman's book was that it didn't do well. Audiences didn't go. And that's not true either, because I went through all the issues of Weekly Variety and looked at the grosses, and it was Bafo and Sacco and Smash and a big draw and Terrific and all of those things, and held over in all the major cities because it was doing such great business. Part of the problem with Oz, and one of the reasons, it was one of the top 10 grossing films of 1939. She didn't bother to mention that either. But as one of the top 10 grossing films, it grossed over $3 million, which was a lot of money then. The trouble was that Oz was very expensive to make, and by the time everything was tallied, it had cost $3,700,000. So no, it didn't make a profit that first go-round. But there were three really good reasons for that. 2 weeks after Oz opened, everywhere in the country, World War II broke out in Europe. Hitler invaded Poland, and that effectively cut off the entire European market, for which MGM had great box office plans for Oz, because it was Technicolor, it was a musical, it was a fantasy, and they knew this would play well in the European market. Well, they didn't get that market until after World War II. The other thing, too, is that Oz was playing to capacity crowds everywhere, but a half to two-thirds of the audience were kids, and they were getting in for 10 cents, 15 cents, 20 cents, as opposed to adults who paid 35 cents, 50 cents. So the theaters were filled, and the money was really, really good, but it just didn't, wasn't enough to make a profit. And then the third reason it didn't score monetarily is that Oz was made in 1939. And we all hear 1939 was the great year for classic Hollywood films.
That's right.
And not only classic ones, but other ones as well. And all the theaters were pre-booked in those days. So Oz was held over for 2 weeks, even 3 weeks, but they couldn't hold it over any longer because the theater was already booked with incoming product. And so that is the one I keep having to refute, because it has gone down into history because hers was the first book that came out. But I don't agree. Let's put it that. I'll be that a gentleman way. And leave it at that.
You know, maybe it's because of the perspective that we have now on this movie, but I find it incredible that someone who runs a movie studio, who's an executive, whose business it is to make entertaining films that families love, or even to make violent films or whatever, doesn't recognize a good movie when it's sitting right in front of him. I mean, I don't, how'd they get that job?
Well, I think, to be honest with you, I think Louis B. Mayer and most of the executives at MGM knew a good movie. This is why MGM was called the Tiffany of the studios in those days. One of the technicians who was interviewed in the early 70s said, many people in Hollywood work for movie studios. They make good movies. We work for MGM. We make better ones. So that was the prevailing attitude. And I don't think they disliked Oz so much as it was politics working. Arthur Freed, as a successful songwriter, now is moving into producer status. And the other producers didn't want that. On top of all that, Mervyn LeRoy had just come over to MGM from Warner Brothers at an unprecedented $6,000 a month to oversee all the producers at MGM. And none of them liked him. And of course, or we're not, but let's put it this way. They weren't crazy about him as a boss. And Arthur Freed and Mervyn LeRoy were the big powers behind Wizard of Oz. So they tried to criticize it every chance they could. No question about that. But again, Louis B. Mayer saw it through. He fought with the New York money people to say, no, we're going to make The Wizard of Oz. They tried to shut it down three times from New York, saying it's costing too much, or it will cost too much. It barely got made. The first 2 weeks of film was completely junked. Judy wore a blonde wig, a frilly party dress, and a load of makeup. She was told to act in kind of a fairy princess sort of way. The Yellow Brick Road looked like a patio in Pacoima. It was these round bricks and very ornate. Margaret Hamilton's hair was down. She looked like Marlo Thomas in That Girl, or Leah Michelle in Glee, depending on your generation, I guess. And the Scarecrow had a harsh makeup. So finally, the director was fired after 2 weeks. All that material was junked. They had to, because then Buddy Ebsen got sick from the aluminum dust in his silver makeup, and he was put in an iron lung, and they had to get another Tin Man. George Cukor came in for a week. He was a very savvy director. He's the one who took the makeup off Judy, told her, just, you are a little girl from the Midwest. You're from Minnesota. Right. Dorothy was from Kansas, but you have to just be yourself. And he changed the witch makeup, the scarecrow makeup, repaved the Yellow Brick Road, and then Victor Fleming took over and directed about 90% of the film to a triumph.
I have to tell you, you have been fascinating to listen to. Where are these books available at the normal places like Amazon, or are there
You'd have to go to Amazon because everything I've written is out of print. I'm the most unsought-after author in America. But these Oz books date back to 1989 and 2009. The Judy books, 1992. They're all different. They're all different. They all have upwards of 500 different pictures each. Because I know it's the pictures that sell these books, no matter how much deathless journalism training I had at Northwestern.
Yes, at Northwestern.
And I had it. But if they just go to Amazon and look up John Fricke and Judy Garland and The Wizard of Oz, they'll find them. And there are used copies, and some places may still have one or two. I don't know. I'm not here to sell books. I'm here.
No, I understand that. I wanted to get that in, though.
Thank you to you to celebrate, and I love to do that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us. I hope maybe we can talk about this again somewhere down the line. Have a great night.